Copyright 2011, JKP, Radha Madhav Dham. All rights reserved.
Swami Nikhilanand is a disciple of Jagat Guru Sri Kripaluji Maharaj. He resides at Radha Madhav Dham in Austin, Texas, which is the U.S. ashram of Jagat Guru Kripalu Parishad. He travels America preaching the philosophy of Sanatan Dharma as taught by Sri Kripaluji Maharaj.
In this series, he incorporates all the main topics of the Hindu scriptures in a beautiful logical flow. The most prominent spiritual confusions of our time are addressed and resolved one by one as the series makes its way towards the culminating topic of bhakti and the path of God realization.
Prathamam Sadgurum Vande Shri Krishna Tadanantaram Guru Papa Manam Trata Shri Krishnas Tvamalatmana.
Souls, as we do every day, we'll start with a few minutes of Nam Sankirtan, and after that we'll continue with this pravachan on the essence of Sanatan Dharma.
Bhajo Giri Sridhar Govinda Gopala.
बोलिए वृंदावन बिहारी लाल की।
एक्सप्लेनिंग द मंत्र तमेव विदित्वाति मृत्युमेति नान्यः पंथा विद्यते यनाय। सो फार इन दिस सीरीज आई हैव एक्सप्लेन्ड टू यू दैट एवरी सोल इज अंश ऑफ भगवान। There are three things that exist that are all mentioned in this mantra. The mantra means, only by crossing this can he reach him. Him being God. The one who has to know him is the soul. And that which must be crossed is Maya. So Maya is a lifeless power of God. God is our Anshi and we are his Ansh. It means we belong to him, we are from him, we're a part of him. And it is the nature of every Ansh to desire his Anshi. And God is Anand. So, since we are Ansh of God, it means we are Ansh of Anand. So, we automatically desire God, which means we automatically desire Anand. And we have always desired only this Anand in every life, since eternity until now. And in every life, every moment of every day has been filled with this search for Anand, because our mind never remains quiet or inactive even for a fraction of a second. Yet in that search for Anand, which has gone on every moment for uncountable lifetimes from eternity until now, we've yet to attain even a drop of real true bliss or real happiness. So how are we going to get that? Just close the door, Rohit. How are we going to get real happiness? Well, we have to get to God. And how to get to God? Well, we have to know him. When we know him, then we'll have faith in him. Immediately, instantly. And instantly we'll love him. And instantly we will attain him. But when we went into the Vedas to try to know God, we were told that God cannot be known. The one who thinks he can know God is a great fool. So why can God not be known? The Vedas told us. God is beyond your senses and intellect. Why is he beyond? We found several reasons. Number one, God is divine, and our senses and our mind are material, mayic. Number two, God is the one giving life to our senses, mind, intellect, everything. He is our prerak, he is our prakashak, he is our dharak. He is inspiring us, illuminating us, upholding us. In addition to that, he is gyata, which means he is the only knower of himself. In addition to that, he is sarvagya. So how could our limited intellect no unlimited divine God? He is beyond us, beyond our senses, man, buddhi, in every way. In addition to this, we learn that God is the abode of simultaneously existing opposites. He is viruddha dharma ashray. And some of those examples the Vedas told us were that God is smaller than the smallest, but simultaneously larger than the largest. He is simultaneously inside of us and outside of us. He's in his divine abode and he's also omnipresent in this world. He is akarta and he is also srishti karta. Ved says, Gyagyodvavajavishanishavaja Hyeka bhoktri bhogyartha yukta
anantaschatma vishvarupo hyakarta trayam yada vindate brahma me tat. Ved says he is akarta. It means he doesn't do anything. And Ved also says, so kamayat bahusyam praja ye yeti satapo tapyat satapas tapva. God desired to create this world and the whole thing came into being. In other words, he created this world. So on one hand, he is akarta, like Gita says, na kartritvam na karmani lokasya srijati prabhu na karma phala sanyogam swabhavastu pravartate. Krishna says, I don't do anything. I don't perform any karma. I don't get involved in the soul's karma. I don't get involved in the creation of this universe. I am apart from all of that. And simultaneously he's saying, aham sarvasya prabhavo mattah sarvam pravartate. All of this came from me. I produced it, I made it, and I'm currently upholding its existence. I'm running it as we speak. So we see these opposites. Today we're going to take a minute to think about Srishti. That did God create this world or not? If he created the world, several questions come up. Number one, when all three things that exist, exist since eternity, Brahma, Jiva, Maya, then what did God create? Number two, if he is the creator of this world, how could Gyanamay, Anandamay, Bhagwan, God who is himself the form of knowledge, the form of bliss, from him, how could this agyanamay, dukhmay sansar come? How could this ignorant and this world full of ignorance and suffering, how could this have come from God? So let's take up these questions first, and there's one more important question after that which we'll also address, which is that if God is omnipresent in this world, tat srishtvat tadevanupravishat. Ved says after he created the world, he entered into it and became omnipresent. So if he's here, why can't we experience him? We'll also address all of these questions regarding Srishti today. So, take the first one. God is said to be the creator of this world. He is Srishti Karta. What is this sansar made of? This world, what is it made of? It's the combined mixture of three things. God, the souls, and Maya. All three things are included in this sansar. Everything we see in the world around us, that's all made of Maya. It's all a product of the Mayic energy. Like, that's called the Upadan Karak. Like if you're baking a cake, the ingredients that you use to make the cake, that's the Upadan. So what is this world made of? It's made of Mayic energy. It's made of Maya. So Maya is here in this world, we the souls, we're here as well, and God is omnipresent in every soul and in every particle of this universe. So God is also here. So this, when we say sansar, what does it mean? It means the combined mixture of Maya plus the souls plus God, all together. So all of these things are said to be eternal. Aja mekam lohita shukla krishnam ityadi. I've quoted this verse for you several times already. There are many verses in the Vedas that say all three of these are eternal. God is aja. Souls are aja. Maya is aja. It means they never began. If something wasn't there and then you create it, you bring it into being, that means its janma happened. But God is aj. It means he never had to be created because he has always existed. souls are aj, because they never had to be created. They have always existed. And maya is aja. Maya also never had to be created, because maya has always existed. So if God didn't create the souls, and God didn't create maya, and God didn't create himself, because all three have always been here, then what did he create? We'll get to this question in a minute. First, let's address this. Since maya, the souls, and God are all unborn, they've existed since eternity, it also means they're going to exist for eternity. They can never be destroyed. Their abhav can never happen. Na sato vidyate bhavo, na bhavo vidyate sata. Gita says that something which is abhav, it does not exist, cannot become bhav. It cannot come into existence. And something which does exist, it is bhav, it cannot become abhav. If it exists, it cannot be made to stop existing. So whatever exists, these three things, God, the souls, and maya, they've always been here, and they always will be here. So it means no one can destroy God, no one can destroy any soul, and no one can destroy maya. So you might think, okay, I'm glad no one can destroy God, and I'm glad no one can destroy any soul, but if no one can destroy maya, how are we ever going to get freed from maya? And wouldn't it be a great thing if God could just destroy maya and we'd all be free? God or any saint, if they had that power to just wipe maya out, get rid of it totally, destroy it forever, we would all be freed from maya simultaneously. And we'd all instantly receive divine bliss. We'd meet with God, because maya is the only thing keeping us from God. So wouldn't that be great? Just like if there's some wild elephant loose in a village, or some tiger running loose, eating people, biting people, or even just some villain running around, hitting people, stealing from people, killing people. In other words, terrorizing the whole area, the whole village, the whole town. And someone comes along and kills him, or kills that tiger, or kills that elephant. Then the whole village gets relief all at once. Oh, good. He's gone. We can all sleep peacefully now. So in the same way, if God or any saint could just destroy maya, we'd all be released from maya simultaneously. But if they could do that, they would have already done it. Obviously, God, if he could destroy maya, if he could free us from maya, and that would be a good thing for us, he would do it. So could any saint. But the truth is, God cannot destroy maya, nor can any soul or any saint destroy maya. So then how will we all be freed from maya? One at a time. There's no automatic freedom. You have to do something to get freed from maya. And when you get freed from maya, everybody else who didn't do the thing you have to do to get freed from maya, in other words, surrender to God, we learned that yesterday, they'll still be under maya and you'll be free. It's just like being in jail. Hundreds and thousands of people are in jail. Some of them may be in handcuffs and chains around their ankles even, locked in a jail cell. So when you're freed from the jail, when your sentence is up, you've been pardoned, and you're released from jail. So the cuffs are taken off, the door is opened, and you're set free. But those handcuffs and chains and the jail itself, it wasn't destroyed. It's still there, and there are other prisoners still being held in the jail, but you're free from it. So when we surrender to God, we are freed from maya forever, but maya still exists. Everybody else is still under maya who hasn't surrendered to God, and you're set free from maya forever. Even if you stay in Maya, meaning in this samsara, after getting liberated from Maya, you may still be here in this world, but you won't be bound by Maya. You won't be held in shackles. You can still live in this world and be liberated from Maya at the same time. That's what the saints do. So, God is eternal, souls are eternal, and Maya is eternal. God could never have created any of the three because all three have existed forever. So the question comes again, what did God create? Did God create this world or not? So in terms of where all of this came from, there are basically two theories. There are hundreds and thousands of theories, but they can all be categorized into two sections. People who say the world created itself, or people who say God created the world. The world came into existence all on its own. There's no intelligent, all-powerful God who decided to create this world. The world, just the energy of this world itself, created the world. And then there are others who say, no, this is impossible. A lifeless, mindless energy like Maya cannot just create the world on its own. There has to be some intelligent, all-powerful being behind all of this. So this idea that could the world have created itself is interesting. And scientists, when they, whatever they know or whatever they try to understand about the origin of this universe, everything is done by what we call anuman praman. They deduce. It's not pratyaksh praman. Pratyaksh praman would be if some scientist had been there at the time the world was created and he saw it happen with his own eyes. That's pratyaksh praman. Then there's no guessing. I saw it happen. This is what happened. This is how the universe came into being. There is no such scientist in existence who has pratyaksh praman of how the world came into existence. So they measure things and they observe things which are presently observable. Patterns, things in existence, energy, movement of planets and galaxies. And they try to, using that, they try to deduce, using logic, that if this is happening now, how did everything happen so that it got to this point? And they try to go back to the point where the universe came into existence. So this is called anuman praman. It's also an acceptable form of evidence. Praman means evidence. Seeing with your own eyes is, of course, the most desirable form of evidence. But we don't have that kind of evidence for the for where this world came from. So we use anuman praman. And scientists use this anuman praman to, you can say, make educated guesses about the origin of the universe. But we can use the same anuman praman to completely refute this idea that the universe could have come into being on its own without the help of God. So, let's take a simple example. That one day, a lecturer came into class and he was teaching. He was a materialist. He didn't teach about that God had any involvement in the manifestation of the universe. He taught all the students that this universe came into being all on its own. This amazing universe, which is so huge, again, scientists don't even know how big it is. Our scriptures say it's unlimited. There's no end in any direction. But science only knows what it's been able to observe so far. And even that is hundreds of millions of light years. Even our own galaxy is hundreds of millions of light years in diameter. Such a huge universe. That lecturer told the kids that how did the universe come into being? It just happened automatically. No one was there to guide it. God did not have anything to do with it. It just happened. So that one of the students, when he was doing his homework that night, because the lecturer said, now I want you students to tomorrow draw a map of this earth planet, draw it properly and color it in and bring it and show it to me. That will be your homework. So one of those boys in the class, he just took a pencil, scribbled randomly on the sheet of paper, and then carelessly colored here and there. And the next day he brought in his paper and he handed it in, and the teacher said, what? Who did this? And the boy put up his hand. He said, that's my homework. And he said, what happened? So that boy said, well, master, sir, I believe that a sheet of paper just came flying out of nowhere. And then a pencil came, I don't know from where, and it just made these marks on the page. And then some coloring pencils came and colored it in, and it just happened like that, automatically. He said, what, are you crazy? Do you think I'm a fool? He said, well, you don't believe that this simple map of the world could come into being on its own, but you believe all of this could come into being on its own, automatically? Take another example. A watch. A watch had to be made by someone, and if it stops working, someone has to fix it. In other words, someone made it, and there's a nyamak also. There's someone keeping sure that the watch keeps proper time, resets it, does, you know, puts a new battery in, whatever needs to be done. The watch didn't make itself, and it can't keep running forever on its own without someone managing it. Similarly, if you look at this universe, it's amazing. Uncountable galaxies, clusters of those galaxies, super clusters of those galaxies, and within each galaxy, different solar systems moving around with the sun and planets around them, and everything in motion, every single thing in motion, and all coordinated. So if a simple thing like a watch or a clock cannot come into being on its own and manage to keep working properly on its own, it takes someone with intelligence to manage all that and to bring that watch into being, how could this amazing, unbelievably complicated samsara, jagat, this whole universe, come into being all on its own and keep running on its own? You don't see galaxies crashing into each other in outer space. Who's managing all of that? There has to be some nyamak, some all-powerful, all-knowing being behind all of this. So, thinking that this universe could come into being on its own, even with this simple logic, it's not rational. It's an irrational thing for any scientist to believe that this world could come into being on its own. You see, for anything to come into being, you need certain things. Certain factors have to all be there. So take something as simple as a clay pot. If you want a clay pot made, first of all, you have to have the right materials available. You have to have the clay, you have to have the temper, you have to have the potter's wheel, you have to have some water, you have to have an oven to cook it. So you need all the ingredients, all the materials, number one. Obviously, those ingredients or those materials cannot just on their own make themselves into a clay pot, so you need a potter. You need someone who's going to make that pot. Number three, the potter has to have the knowledge of that pot that you want made. If you go and go to a potter who just knows how to make simple pottery, and you tell him, I want, you know, this kind of beautiful, complex pot made, he'll say, I know how to make simple pots. I don't know how to make that kind of pot. So the potter also has to have the correct knowledge, the required knowledge to produce that thing. Number four, he also has to have the ichcha. He has to have the desire to make that pot. If all the materials are there, the potter is there, the potter has the correct knowledge to make that pot, but he doesn't have the desire to do it. Like you see someone, you come home from work, and your teenager who's on summer holidays is sitting on the couch, and you ask, "Did you eat today while I was at work?" "No." "What? I had left the food I cooked in the fridge." "What, you couldn't just, you know, put it on a plate and put it in the microwave? You didn't know how to do that?" "No, I knew how." So see, the ingredients were there, the person was there, the knowledge of knowing how to do that was there. "No, I just didn't feel like it. I was watching TV. I didn't want to get up and do that." The desire to do it wasn't there. So the ichcha also has to be there. Then the next thing, sankalp. He has to decide, "I'm going to do it. Not only I want to do it, but then I'm going to do it." Then cheshta. He has to do the effort to do it, and then kriya, that thing happens. So all of those things have to be there. The banane wala has to be there. The saman to make that thing has to be there. The right gyan has to be there. Sankalp, ichha, sankalp, cheshta, kriya. Then it gets done. If any one of these things is missing, a simple pot, clay pot, can't even come into being. So it must mean that all of those things have to be required for this universe to come into being as well. It means there has, the right ingredients have to be there, the maker has to be there has to be a desire for this universe to come into being, a decision has to be made for that to happen, the effort has to be done to bring it into being, and then the kriya happens. So, if someone says, "No, I don't believe God had anything to do with this," but any logical person would have to agree that all of these factors have to be present for something to come into being. So then you could ask that person, let's say he says, "Just nature created the universe." In other words, the universe created itself. So then you could say, so then that means your nature also has gyan shakti, ichha shakti, sankalp shakti, cheshta shakti, kriya shakti. And if your nature has all of those things, then your nature is just another word for Ram, Krishna, Bhagwan, God. You're just calling God by another name. Because this light, this ingredients, this energy of Maya, which is the actual matter that the universe is made of, it's lifeless and mindless. Every scientist would agree with that too. The universe does not have a mind. The matter is not alive. It's just an energy. So if you're saying that this, whatever is behind the creation of this universe, definitely has all of those things, gyan, ichha, sankalp, cheshta, shakti, kriya, shakti, then you're just calling God by another name, because you're, for some reason, you're resisting to believe in God, or to believe that God could be behind all of this. So if you say, no, nature has all of those qualities, so nature created the universe. So then fine, we can accept that. God has many names. He's called Ram, he's called Krishna. We can call nature. From tomorrow, instead of just saying Ramaya Namaha or Krishnaya Namaha, we'll say Natureaya Namaha. No problem. Our Bhagwan has uncountable names. Anantanama Rupaya. No problem. But there has to be some supreme power behind all of this, definitely. So scientists know that it's illogical, it's irrational to think that all of this could have come into being on its own. They know that behind the most subtle energy they've been able to discover, behind that, there's something else. What is that? They don't know. Behind everything is God. And science can never reach God because science is beyond material senses, material intellect, material any kind of instrumentation that a scientist could develop. God is beyond all of that. And the means of researching and discovering about God is different than science. It's like a spiritual science. Through spiritual practice, you realize about God, not through scientific observation in a physical way. So, this idea that the world could have come into being on its own, we can throw that out. If this, you know, nowadays they talk about the Big Bang Theory. I'm not going to discuss the scientific merits of the Big Bang Theory today with you, but let's just say, you know, there was an energy and it expanded into the form of this universe. Fine. When did that happen? It happened at a certain point in time. Before that, the energy didn't expand, didn't evolve into the form of the universe. Now, this energy is lifeless and mindless. Every scientist will accept that. And he'll also accept that at some point, that energy that was pre-existing, because scientists also know energy can't come out of nowhere. The energy was there, just in a subtle form, and it expanded into the form of this universe. So why did it pick that point in time? Did the energy decide? Now's the time. Activate. Can your TV turn itself on? No, you turn the TV on or off. So somebody had to activate this Mayic energy, and then this universe was manifested. It can't, a lifeless, mindless energy can't just decide, now's the time, and activate itself. And if a scientist says, oh yes it did, then you can ask, then why didn't it do it before? Why did it choose that time? So somebody had to do that, and that somebody was God. So Maya, this energy, was involved in the creation of the universe. It is the upadan karak. It's the material cause of the universe is Maya. But the nimitta karan, you can say the mechanical cause, for lack of a better term in English, means a cake doesn't bake itself. You get all the ingredients together, it's not going to bake itself. The nimitta karan is the baker who makes the cake. The upadan karan is the ingredients, the flour, water, milk, etc. So God is the nimitta karan of this universe, and Maya, the energy of this universe, is the upadan karan. So the universe could not have created itself. Right? Right. So that means God created the universe. Right? No, that doesn't make sense either. Because God is Gyanamaya Anandamaya. So from Anandamaya Gyanamaya Bhagwan, how could this imperfect world full of suffering, full of ignorance, how could that have come from God? You see, from an elephant is born. From a horse is born. So from God, something godly should have been born, right? If God created this universe, it should have been Anandamay Gyanamay, just like Bhagwan. Satyam Gyanam Anandam Brahma. Our Vedas say, God is absolute bliss. He's absolute knowledge. He's the form of bliss and knowledge. So, how could such a world have come from God? To understand this, and also answer the question, since Maya, the souls, and God are eternal, it means, it doesn't make logical sense that God could have created this universe either. So let's answer this question by understanding the word Srishti. It means the world didn't create itself, God didn't create the world, nor has the world been in existence forever. We know this universe had a beginning and it's going to have an end. So if the universe didn't create itself, God didn't create it, but it hasn't been in existence forever, that doesn't make sense either. One of the three has to be right. Either it came into existence on its own, no. Or God created it, no. Or it's just existed forever, no. So what is right then? Kripaluji Maharaj explains it like this. The manifestation or creation of the universe in Sanskrit is referred to with the word Srishti. Srishti has a root, dhatu, which is srij. So the meaning of srij is srij pradurbhave, which means chodana, to release something. That is the literal meaning of the term srishti, to release. So understand it with an example. Let's say there's a boy in the schoolyard and there's a makki flying around, a house fly, and he catches it in his hand because he's quick. Just grabs it and he holds that fly in his hand. And then he says, "Oh friends, do you think I can create a fly out of nothing? Come and see. Watch, out of my hand I'm going to create a fly." And all his friends come around. "Oh, really? Okay, let's see." And he opens his hand and the fly flies out and flies away. And all those boys say, "Oh, come on. You caught that fly. You just caught it and then you let it go." That's what srishti is. The universe is here and then God brings it all in, like catching it. He pulls the whole thing inside himself. In other words, he dissolves this physical universe. But the energy is still there. It just goes into a dormant form, an absolutely subtle form, and he holds it inside of himself. And then when it's time to do srishti again, he releases it. Just like that boy released the fly. So did God create something? No, he didn't create anything. He simply released that which he had brought inside of himself. Ved says, yathorna nabhi srijate grihnate cha yatha prithivya oshadhaya sambhavanti yatha sata purushat keshalomani tathaksharat sambhavati havishvam. Just like a spider spins a web and then eats it. Just like plants grow on the surface of the earth and then decompose back into it. Just like hair grows on somebody's arm or on somebody's head, grows out of you. Similarly, God produces this universe and brings it back in. He produces this samsara and brings it back in. Again and again and again. So in fact, God never created anything. Take another example. I'm sure we have many cricket fans here. So nowadays, although one day cricket has become popular, used to be they played a 5-day test match. So in that 5-day test match, after the first day, however many runs had been made, who had gotten out, all of that is kept, recorded, and then the next day when they begin again at 10 a.m., everybody comes out on the field exactly where they were, where they finished the day before. And the same, if that batter was out, he's still out today. Whoever was batting is still batting. However many runs he's made, he's still at that level. So they just start from where they left off the day before. The umpire takes up his place outside and watches, governs what's going on, hands out judgments. In the same way, this pralay. What happens when God does pralay, it just is like a break. So everything stops. He pulls everything, dissolves everything within Him. So there's nothing happening. Like going to sleep. All the souls get a break. All of this activity stops. And the souls also rest within God, as well as Maya. Then He releases it again, and the souls go out and take birth. So just like that cricket match, where we were the previous srishti, we take up from that point in the new srishti. So nothing starts anew, it's just whatever was happening before, whatever position you were in, again, you start from there. So this idea that God is somehow responsible for the fact that there's so much ignorance or suffering in the world, that is not logical either. If He had created this universe out of nothing, then you could question, God, why did You create this? And You made it so bad. But He didn't create anything. Whatever was there before, He produced the same thing today. Surya chandrama saudhata yatha purvam akalpayat. Rigved says, exactly as everything was before, God reproduces it when He does the next srishti. And this is an eternal cycle. It never began. Like a never-ending cricket game. The cricket game has 5 days, so it starts and ends, but this cricket game of our life has been going on forever. Uncountable lifetimes. It never ever began. So we take up our position, we grab our bat and we play and we make our runs and God is the umpire. In other words, we do the karma. We take up place on this, it's called dharma kshetra or karma kshetra. This whole samsara is our playing field where we get to perform our karmas. Making the runs is performing your karma. And the umpire is God. He observes and sees who's following the rules, who isn't, can hand out a penalty if necessary. So this is this universe. This is how it runs. So just like if someone who doesn't know anything about cricket comes on the second day of a 5-day match, and when they start at 10 in the morning, he says, "Hey, that's not fair. Why does that team already have 150 runs on the board? And that batter's already out? That's no fair to him." He might start complaining to the umpire like this. What kind of injustice is this? What kind of a cricket game is this? Similarly, ignorant people in the world who don't have this knowledge, they blame God. That, oh, why is all this suffering happening? It's your own, you made the runs. It's your own kamai from your last life, from the previous day of playing in the cricket game. The same score is carried over today. So God is not responsible for any of that. He just, wherever you were, He put you back at the same place to start in this life. So God is not responsible for the suffering in this world or the state of this world. It's a reflection of our own karma. And God didn't create Maya. Maya has been here forever. And the good and bad qualities of Maya, sattva, raj, tam, those are also eternal. So God didn't create good and bad. They are inborn, inherent qualities of Maya. Sattva, raj, tam is Maya. Maya itself is made of these three qualities. So good and bad is inborn in Maya. Maya itself is sattva, raj, tam. So it means, where did good and bad come from? Good meaning sattva, bad meaning tam. Where did it come from? It didn't come from anywhere. It's an inherent quality of Maya. So the good and bad qualities of this world are also eternal. And then we get more or less of comfort or suffering depending upon our karma. That's it. So God, that's why God says, on one hand, I have nothing to do with this srishti. All I do is let it go. It's all happening according to your karma. But on the other hand, none of this could be happening without God's involvement, because He's the one who releases this sansar, and he also keeps track of our karma, and he is the one who gives us the consequences, because karma on its own cannot just manifest a consequence. So, now we've solved this problem about where did the universe come from. The mayic energy has been here forever, but God cycles it. He manifests it in this physical form, and then he dissolves it into a subtle form. So the manifested form is called srishti, creation. And the dissolved form is called pralay, or mahapralay. This cycle never began. So we've always been here. So is God the creator? On one hand, yes, because he's the one who activates Maya and manifests it, but he didn't create this world from scratch. He didn't create it out of nothing. This cycle has been going on forever. Now this brings us to our last question for today. We've already answered, solved this riddle about did God create the universe or not. Now this last riddle is also very important to understand. Tat srishtva tadeva anupravishat. After creating the universe, Ved says, God entered into it and became omnipresent. So, God is here. And who is God? Ananda Sindhu. He's the ocean of unlimited divine bliss. Yet, Ananda Sindhu Madhya Tavvasa Binu Jane Katamarasi Piyasa. Yet we're all dying of thirst for that same Ananda. We want divine bliss, and we're swimming in the ocean of divine bliss and not experiencing even a drop of it. How is that possible? In other words, how are we to believe that God is omnipresent in this universe when we cannot experience Him? If in this glass of water you mix in some sugar, even a little bit of sugar, and taste it, you're going to taste the sweetness. So if you can taste a little bit of sugar mixed in your water, why can't you taste God who's even inside that sugar, who's the unlimited ocean of Madhurya? Ras. You can't taste him? What, did the taste of that sugar, little bit of sugar, overpower the unlimited bliss of God so that you couldn't taste God's bliss? No. Again, it comes back to something we brought up before. God is divine, and our senses, mind, intellect are all material. So for the same reason, even if Bhagwan Ram or Bhagwan Shri Krishna come on this earth planet, Ram was here for 11,000 years. Not even a single soul got God realized by seeing Ram in 11,000 years. Why? Because all the souls have material eyes, material vision, prakrit indriya, prakrit man, prakrit buddhi. So, God is divine. Our senses, mind, and intellect are material. So whether it's God during His avatar kaal, when you can see Him face to face, you can't recognize His divinity. Or God who's sitting right inside your own heart, you can't even experience that. Or God who's omnipresent in this universe, with material senses, mind, and intellect, you cannot experience God. Think of it this way. Let's say there's someone who's munching on a neem leaf. You know how bitter that is. And he's tasting it, he's munching on it, and you ask him, how does it taste? And he says, oh, it's sweet. Say, is something wrong with you? Or are your taste buds working okay? So you inquired and you researched and you found out, oh, today he got bitten by a snake. And because of the snake poison, even something as bitter as a neem leaf tastes sweet to him. Or take another example of someone, let's say you have this white wall, a pure white wall, or this napkin, pure white. And you show it to someone, you hold it up in front of his face, and you say, "What color is this?" And he says, "It's yellow." "What? Are you lying? Does that really look yellow to you? How can it look yellow?" He says, "I'm not lying. It really is yellow. How can a white thing, it's actually white, why is it looking yellow?" "Oh, you have jaundice. He's got a liver problem. He's got jaundice. So that white thing actually looks, it appears yellow to him." Similarly, just like that snake poison is inside that person and affecting his senses. Just like that jaundice is inside that person and affecting that person's ability to perceive. His perception is altered or distorted. In the same way, the maya inside our senses, mind and intellect, that distorts our perception. So even if we see a divine Ram, divine Krishna right before us during their avatar kal, we see the wrong thing. Just like a person seeing something white, but he sees it yellow. Because our senses, mind and intellect are mayic, we see them as mayic. One last example. One time, there was a big pile of sugar. And there were some ants who went walking on that pile of sugar. For them, it was like a mountain of sugar. So at the end of the day, this one ant said, "Wow, I spent all day walking on a mountain of sugar today. I just feel like inside and outside, I'm just sugar, sugar. I tasted sugar, I smelled sugar, I'm covered in sugar. It was great." And the other ant, his friend, said, "Sugar? Something wrong with you? I was walking on the same mountain. It was a mountain of salt." So a philosopher came and he said, "Wow, this is really an interesting problem. One of you must be lying." So he did a lie detector test and he found out, nope, neither one is lying. The one ant who's saying that it's a mountain of sugar and I tasted sugar all day, he's telling the truth. And the other ant who's saying, "No, it's a mountain of salt and I tasted salt all day," that one is also telling the truth. So he did more inquiry, more research, and he found out that in that one's mouth, who was saying it tasted like salt, there was a big lump of salt she kept in her cheek. So the whole day she was wandering around on that mountain of sugar and only experienced salt. Similarly, inside our antahkaran, inside our own heart and mind, what's there? Maya. It's like maya has control. It's maya's kingdom inside here. So that maya that's inside there, even though God is here, He's everywhere, when we see or when we experience, the maya that's inside of us just comes out. That's what we see, that's what we taste, that's what we smell, that's what we hear. Only material things. Yet a saint says, "Ishavasya midagvam sarvam yatkincha jagatyan jagat purukha eve dagvam sarvam yadbhutam yatcha bhavyam sarvam khalvidam brahma vasudeva sarvamiti." In other words, this whole world is just, God is everywhere. God permeates everything in this world, a saint is saying. Someone who's gone beyond maya. Someone who's been freed from maya sees God everywhere, experiences God everywhere, tastes God, sees God, hears God, smells God, touches God, everywhere in this very universe. So when the saints tell us, "Oh, you're swimming in the ocean of bliss," we say, "What, are you crazy? This world, the ocean of bliss?" Because we've got maya in here. So whatever we see or experience can only be mayic. And even though God is right here, We can't experience him. So we can't experience his omnipresence, nor can we see him or experience his divinity when he takes avatar, when he comes here in this world. So everything that's in our scriptures, everything that saints teach us, is just to get rid of this one bimari, this one disease we have, maya. All we need to do is get rid of that. This idea of bhagwat prapti, or you have to attain God. What? You're swimming in the ocean of bliss. God is here. You don't have to go anywhere. He's here, right inside your heart. He's beside you. He's in front of you. He's behind you. He's all around you. You don't have to go anywhere to get God or find God. All you have to do is get rid of maya. Then you'll attain God. So, in order to get rid of maya, we have to become surrendered to God. This now clears up all of these questions we had about srishti. Backtracking, we had gotten to that point where we understood we cannot know God because he's absolutely beyond our material senses and mind. But then we also found out that unlimited souls have known God and have attained God. So, how did they do that? Oh, they received God's grace. Only by receiving God's grace can you know him, can you attain him. Then we asked the question, then why has God not graced us? It must mean there's a condition for receiving his grace. And we found out that condition is in fact surrender. You have to become surrendered to God, then he will grace you. Through his grace you can know him, experience him, attain him, get freed from maya, through his grace, which is received by surrendering. But surrendering to God cannot be considered a condition or a demand or a price for receiving God's grace. Because surrendering means doing nothing. That's surrender, like a newborn child does nothing. He's fully surrendered to his parents, so they do everything for him. So we have to return to that state of doing nothing. Surrendering to God means surrendering your mind to him. Give him your mind. And this very mind, which is mayic, material, impure, dirty, full of uncountable lifetimes of past sins, God is willing to accept that from us. He says, I don't want anything else from you. Give me your mind. And he will clean it, make it divine, fill it with divine power, and give it back to you. He does all of that for free if you just surrender to him. So surrendering to God is not a price. It just means give him your mind and he'll make it divine. He'll reveal himself to you. So to become surrendered to God, it means turning towards God. I explained that he's already showering his grace, but we have to open our heart to receive it. He's willing to grace us, but right now we're turned away from God. To receive his grace, we have to turn towards him. So that is not a physical act of turning, it's an emotional act of turning. Right now you're attached in the world. Surrendering to God or turning towards God means getting attached to God. Surrender and attachment and faith are different words for the same thing. Right now we are surrendered to the world, which means we're facing the world and our back is to God. Another way to say that, we're attached in the world, which means we're not attached to God. We only have one mind. You can't have the same mind attached in the world and attached to God. Why not? Because where do you get attached? Where you believe, where you have faith that you're going to find Anand. Very simple. So we have faith that we're going to find Anand in this world. Therefore, we're turned away from God. We don't believe we're going to get Anand from God. Otherwise, we would have surrendered to him lifetimes ago. We have firm faith that there's happiness in this world and we're going to get it from this world. Therefore, we've become attached in the world. In other words, we're turned towards the world and away from God. So if we want to receive God's grace, we have to turn towards Him. In other words, we have to reverse this decision that there is happiness in the world. We have to make our mind understand there is happiness in God, and through that we'll become attached to God. In other words, we'll become surrendered to God. Then we'll receive His grace. Then we'll get perfect happiness. But the problem is that we're so attached in the world that just by thinking once, our worldly attachment will not go away. If we were right in the middle, in other words, not attached to God and not attached in the world, and someone came here in the mandir and said, there's happiness in God, you could attach your mind to God instantly and become God-realized that moment. But our mind is already attached in the world. So even though I'm telling you there's happiness in God, you're like, So that doesn't go away just in 1 minute of thinking about it. You really have to deeply understand about what is this world and what is the nature of happiness in this world. As well, what is true detachment? What is true vairagya? It's not about physically running away from the world. It's an internal state. So if we can succeed in detaching our mind from this world, then we can attach it to God. So from tomorrow, I'm going to start explaining about the nature of worldly happiness and how to detach the mind from the world. So all of you grihasthis sitting here, don't worry that I'm going to tell you you have to leave your family and your house and your job and go live at Radha Madhav Dham or any ashram. That's not what I'm going to tell you. I'm going to explain to you how, while living in the world, without physically changing anything, you can actually detach your mind internally, detach from the world and attach to God. This is required for progress on the spiritual path. So that will be the topic for tomorrow. We'll finish by singing a kirtan today.
Naam ke mutabik
जो भी आया भर भर के झोली आया सुनते हैं जो भी आया भर भर के झोली आया पर यह फकीर संग लाया पर यह फकीर माला झोली न संग लाया ना दे मर्जी तेरी है रहवर झोली तो दे दे दाता झोली तो दे दे दाता ठोकर बहुत है खाया कर बहुत है खाया ठोकर बहुत है खाया ठोकर बहुत है खाया ठोकर बहुत है खाया झोली तो दे दे दाता ठोकर बहुत है खाया तेरा नाम सुन के दाता दर पर फकीर आया नाम के मुताबिक कर दे करम खुदाया है देर तेरे घर में अंधेर तो नहीं है है देर तेरे घर में अंधेर तो नहीं है तेरे घर में अंधेर तो नहीं है तेरे आशिकों ने मुझको तेरे आशिकों ने मुझको यह राज है बताया तेरे आशिकों ने मुझको यह राज है बताया
is Kaya. Tere aashiqon ne mujhko yeh raaz hai bataya.
श्री राघवेंद्र सरकार की जय।